Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. Find the books, people, recipes, restaurants, value wines, and easy cocktails we feature online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. Who wants to go for personal or professional development with the sense that there's something fundamentally wrong with you? That's not our point. And yet, I don't know anyone who isn't interested in feeling less stress, appreciating life more, being at the top of your game personally and professionally. Some anonymous Spaniard said, "Life is short, but it can be ever so wide." I like that. Anyway, if we're all a work in progress, let's have the greatest experience of this life that we can. Why not? That's why we have psychologist and mindfulness trainer Dr. Tara Brock on the show. I took her weekend workshop at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York. It was terrific. She also has a couple of books out, Radical Acceptance and a new one, True Refuge. I'm going to ask Tara Brock to explain mindfulness, especially focusing on a technique known by the acronym RAIN, so it's easy to remember. A little training in mindfulness and researchers can see within 8 weeks a host of beneficial changes. The RAIN method of becoming more aware or perceptive increases a person's ability to handle stressors and understand what happened quickly in any given moment. That awareness leads to fewer mystifying disagreements, better negotiation professionally and personally, less numbness in a day as we roar through a million tasks. Dr. Tara Brock is on the phone to walk us through mindfulness using the acronym RAIN. First, we'll get to know her a little bit. Thanks, Tara.
Pleasure to be with you, Faith. Thanks for inviting me.
So how does mindfulness make your life better personally?
You know, in the old days, I think there was a sense of always tumbling into the future, like I was on my way somewhere. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing I would say with mindfulness is it's taught me to pause so I can arrive here more, so I get to appreciate the moments. That's like the biggest one. It also gives me information, like when I'm caught up in some reactivity and I haven't really caught on to it, it helps me notice what's going on so I can come home more quickly to being caring or being open-minded or whatever it is I value.
You were saying in your book that it helps you, and it can help anybody, understand a situation, and you may have a deep opinion about it, but understand somebody else's perspective.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that Thoreau said that the greatest miracle is to look through another's eyes for even an instant. And we're so lodged within our own perspective, and mindfulness, the fullness of mind, lets us begin to relax and open and sense that question, well, what's life like for you? And we have already in our brains the wiring, the empathic wiring, to be able to sense other people, but we're so preoccupied we often don't activate it. So mindfulness actually activates empathy.
We also have in our brains that wiring that puts us on high alert so that, if there's danger through time, we jump at it. These brains of ours make us, as you pointed out, look back and look forward, and sometimes we skip the present moment. So you just told me that the brain's also wired this other way. So is this practicing of mindfulness developing that other side?
Exactly right. I feel like it's part of facilitating our own evolution. If you look at the big picture, we're all rigged with fight, flight, freeze, as you mentioned, and it's necessary, and mindfulness isn't to override that. But we spend so many moments unnecessarily reactive, unnecessarily caught up in feeling insecure or irritated or whatever it is. So mindfulness helps to strengthen the part of the brain that can see that's going on and allow us to pause and disengage from that reactivity enough to have some more choice.
If you practice mindfulness a little each day, what happens?
The first thing that happens is you start noticing how many moments you're lost in thought. I mean, we're not aware sometimes of how we spend huge swaths of our time thinking about the future or the past and not noticing what's right here. So we begin to know how much we're lost. And then even in a short time, we start getting the knack of catching ourselves when we've kind of gotten in one of those unproductive spirals and saying, just come back, just be here for a moment. And it's actually empowering.
Yeah, I burst out laughing not so long ago when it dawned on me how little time I spend realizing I'm alive.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like a little machine going through 1,000 motions without even considering that basic thought.
Well, you know, when you say it, it's actually really poignant, Faith, because I have so many people coming to me, and over the years as a psychologist, this is particularly true, saying that their greatest regret is the sense that they're not really living their lives, and that they're kind of racing to the finish line, and what's that? That's death, and kind of skimming the surface. So I think of one of the great gifts of mindfulness is it really teaches us to arrive and be right here, in the one place where we can actually viscerally feel love, or in the one place where we actually can be creative, or see more truly what's happening.
I'm interested in the fact that these sectors of life have become, these quadrants of people have become interested in this mindfulness technique. So we see the military becoming interested in doing this kind of training. We see schools now teaching mindfulness to young kids and seeing enormous changes in these kids. I find this, we see businesses bringing this in. I find this very interesting that this isn't just one of those woo-woo things we call it, where it's only about your personal self. This crosses over into both personal and professional relationships.
That's exactly right. And I think what shifted it from some new agey thing to something that has really garnered the respect that it turns it into something that is being adopted by the culture is science. The science are basic. Scientists are saying what the mystics have claimed over the eons, which is that when you train yourself to pay attention, when you're willing to actually, just like you would exercise your body, when you exercise the mind and train yourself, there are changes that happen in the brain and its structure and function that really cultivate qualities that we value. And so the military is adopting it because it brings more equanimity. It allows you to handle stress in a way that doesn't have you become exhausted and, all the physiological reactions that cause so much trouble. In the school systems, that's the one I'm most excited about, and we're working a lot with that here in Washington. There's so much evidence that children, that their emotional resilience and their capacity to learn and ways of socializing change, it's reduced bullying. And, you know, so this fall we did a few classes on Capitol Hill, and so now I got an email a few weeks ago, and we're setting up regular classes now to teach mindfulness on the Hill. We have legislators and staff coming. It's definitely getting out there.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Well, a technique, I'll get to the personal story in just a second, because you talk about a couple in the book who said, you know, after about 25, 28 years of marriage, you know, we're not going to make it. We're having real trouble. And mindfulness saved their marriage. So we're going to get to that. But this technique, I feel like we should skip to this. A technique I know you like is known by the acronym RAIN, R-A-I-N. What do those letters stand for?
R is recognize, and it's our capacity just to notice what is happening right in this moment. And A is allow. So what normally happens is that when something comes up, rather than allowing it to be there, we immediately try to control it, push it away, grab on. So the R and the A are just to recognize and allow what's here. And let's say what's here is a strong feeling of anxiety. So then the I is to investigate it. And the eye is really a double eye, because it's investigated with an intimate attention. So that rather, again, than just acting out of anxiety, we develop a relationship with our inner life. We investigate it. We sense what's going on, what we might be believing, how it plays in our body. And as we offer an intimate attention, which really means kindness, something always shifts. This is just the alchemy of mindfulness, that in the moments that we reposition ourselves to be relating to what's going on, not from it, when we pause and do that, our whole sense of who we are shifts. So there's a kind of an enlarging, and that's the end of RAIN, where it's not personal. We're not identified anymore. Another way to say the end of RAIN is that we're back to our natural wholeness.
So the idea with the N at the end of RAIN is to not necessarily identify with that feeling that you're seeing.
And there's no, and you don't have to do the N. The N is the fruit, and it happens spontaneously that you're no longer identified. You know, the pain of what goes on for us is that we're identified with it. So if there's anxiety going on, I like the metaphor of an ocean and waves. It's like anxiety's a wave, and we are that wave. It possesses us. We're caught in it. With mindfulness, we remember our oceanness, and the waves of anxiety and the waves of curiosity and the waves of anger and the waves of all our parts are there, but we're not identified by any one of them. We are resting in a larger perspective and a larger experience, so there's not suffering.
So by using this acronym RAIN and going through those set of letters, the way you just described, that's being mindful.
Yes, RAIN, and there's no particular magic to RAIN other than the fact that when we get caught and stuck in emotional reaction, the last thing we can remember is how to come into some sort of a mindful presence. We're in reaction. So RAIN is an easy handle. It just, you say, okay, RAIN, recognize what's going on. Oh, well, what's going on is I'm having these thoughts and these feelings and so on. And then you say, A, allow. Okay, just pause. Just let it be as it is. You don't have to do something right now. And then the I, investigate. Just start noticing what's really going on inside. And so you begin to slow it down and develop a relationship with the experience. It no longer has quite the potency. You've got a lot more choice.
Okay, I'm Faith Middleton. We're focusing in on professional and personal development for a better experience of life day to day. Dr. Tara Brock is a practicing psychologist in Washington, D.C., coaching us in mindfulness using a quick method known by the acronym RAIN. Her books are Radical Acceptance and this new one, True Refuge. You can find it now or anytime online at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. So let's say I'm using this RAIN technique, Tara, and I get to watching this feeling inside myself and not necessarily identifying. And the idea is to look at that and say, isn't that interesting that this is how I react in this situation? In other words, how do you keep from judging? How do you keep from saying, you know, oh, do you always have to do that? Now, look, you know, that's a terrible thing that you're doing. Where does judgment go?
Well, that's a great question, because I think our biggest suffering is how quickly we judge ourselves. And in my first book, Radical Acceptance, I talked about the trance of unworthiness as one of the most deep kind of painful places we get into, where we have this fundamental sense something's wrong with me. So as you say, it's very common that in the midst of whatever we're experiencing emotionally, let's say we're feeling anger towards somebody, then there's some part of us that says, oh, I'm bad for feeling this. And then that becomes the place that we apply RAIN to. We apply RAIN to our own harsh self-judgment.
The thing I would love to talk with you about is how much we can fool ourselves where we might be frustrated or angry without realizing it, and then kind of act out in an inappropriate way or against our better interests at work or personally, and how this RAIN technique is helpful, how mindfulness is helpful with that. Tara, stay right where you are. We're going to talk more about this and open the phones shortly for your calls, questions, and comments. Stay with us. I'm Faith Middleton. Find out what we talk about on the show online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on programs to find the Faith Middleton Show. And here's what we're doing. We have Dr. Tara Brock. We're talking about personal and professional development to have a better experience of life. And she's a practicing psychologist from Washington, D.C., coaching us in mindfulness using a quick method known by the acronym RAIN. Her books are Radical Acceptance and the new one, True Refuge. Tara, let's say you have feelings. This happens all the time. You're not aware of them. Things are speeding by at a million miles an hour. And I don't mean that you choose not to look. You just got so much going on. You're not aware that frustration is building, anger, whatever it might be. And out comes something you say. It's destructive to the situation, whether you're at work or at home. How does mindfulness keep this from happening?
Well, when you bring that question up, it reminded me of someone I worked with some years ago who was an executive and was responsible for many, many people and had an anger that would, just as you described, he wouldn't realize he was building up. Then all of a sudden he'd blast out at somebody. And he really hated himself for his anger. And, you know, it wasn't something that, you know, he was embarrassed by it and so on. And so he started doing a stress reduction course that taught some mindfulness, and then we applied it directly to his anger. And we did it with RAIN. And just what he would learn to do was that when he was first, he had to deal with how much he hated himself for it. And that's, you know, it's, in other words, it wasn't that the mindfulness was interrupting a chain reaction. He had to first deal with it. So he would go inside that hatred and, you know, and realize that his father had done the same thing. You know, he could feel that. So the way we applied RAIN was every time he, you know, we got together and started exploring a recent time that he was angry and recognize it, okay, the anger's rising, let it be there in his body, because that's often what we have to allow, just let it be there. And then the investigation was, what are you believing right now? And the belief was, I don't matter, people aren't respecting me. And that feeling of being diminished. So that was what he investigated and found was there. And then the intimate attention was that he felt a sense of kindness towards himself, kind of, because it was a young feeling, I don't matter, and offered himself some kindness, just a gesture of kindness. So we're at the eye of RAIN right now, kind of investigating and an intimate attention. And as soon as he began to be a little more kindly towards himself, he felt a shift. And he felt that he was no longer the angry bad person. He was that presence, that compassion that was being in relationship with himself. We talked, just to take it a little bit further, he would, every time the anger would come up, with it was a sense of, I shouldn't be like this. And at one point I said to him, you know, it's not your fault. It's a deep conditioning, but it's not your fault. And it was at that time that a huge amount of lot of tears, because he had so long lived with the sense of, I'm bad for this. So I'm emphasizing this, Faith, because in a way, we can't change patterns until there is that quality of mindfulness and kindness that's self-forgiving. We have to kind of in some way just get that it's not our fault. These are very deeply grooved patterns. And then we can begin to slow things down and pause right on the spot.
So you describe in the book this couple I mentioned earlier who, after more than 25 years of marriage, decide they're going to call it quits. And they go to a Catholic retreat. They try it. It really is gives them some hope. And then they come back home again, and they start again with the old patterns. And so you recommended mindfulness training to them. And when I read that story, I saw how it actually saved their marriage. Can you explain how that went for them and why it helped?
And I'll speak for them, but I'll speak for many, many couples, which there's a relational dance, and it's largely unconscious when it's happening, where one person's unmet needs and ways of reacting to them will trigger the other. And unless there's a way of slowing down and remembering what most matters to us, and then applying mindfulness to what's going on inside us, you know, at that moment, there's no way to interrupt the pattern of the dance. So for them, they realized that they needed to remember their deepest aspiration, which really had to do with choosing love, deciding, okay, love is more important than being right, love is more important than winning. And that enabled them to say, okay, let me get in touch with myself. If we can get in touch with ourselves and feel where our vulnerability is, recognize and allow it, offer some compassion, then it's much easier to open our attention to another person and see what's going on for them. And one of the metaphors I often will share with people that they find very helpful, especially couples, is imagine that you're walking in the woods and you see a dog under a tree and you go over to pet it and the dog lurches at you and bares its fangs. And, you know, instead of, you know, being friendly the way you imagined, it's this mean, bad dog in your mind. And then all of a sudden you notice that its leg is in a trap. And you shift again and you go, oh, I'm sorry, you poor thing. Well, what happens in couples is they begin to recognize both in themselves, oh, okay, I was hurting, that's why I did that. And they can share it with each other, and they can see each other's vulnerability. And as soon as that kind of presence and recognition of each other's vulnerability is there, there's hope for the relationship.
In this couple, they just were talking past each other, and you advised them, you said, look, when you're in a situation like this, and one is attacking, the other one says, and the other one is withdrawing, you know, this is how they each see it. Mm-hmm. Either person can call for a break.
That's
and,
right.
And then go off, and the other person says, okay, I agree to honor. If whichever one of us calls for a break, this is what we do. So you just pause and go off on your own and check in with yourself. And then you come back at the agreed upon time, might be 15 minutes, it might be the next day. And after checking with yourself, you're saying that using this kind of RAIN technique about how is this registering inside me, searching, scanning the body, thinking about the mind, you being mindful, you come back and you tend not to get in the same loop of discussion. You talk in a different way. And how does that talk sound?
Well, bottom line is that rather than blame, there is a tendency to seek to understand. And the reason that's there is because when we've had time to be with our own experience in a way that's not just repeating the same resentful thoughts, but is honestly and courageously looking at, okay, so where am I hurting and what's going on and how can I offer an intimate attention to this? When we do that RAIN process, we arrive at a larger place of balance and understanding, and we're not as inclined to go into the same old pattern of you're bad, it's your fault, because we've taken responsibility. We have responded to ourselves first. And so there's more space to actually listen to each other. And I found with couples that the timeout, just the way we would have a child do a timeout to calm down and get a little more back into a in touch with their own resources and resilience, with couples, it's magic.
And I'm Faith Middleton. We're focusing in on professional and personal development for a better feeling about life on a day-to-day basis. And Dr. Tara Brock is our guest, a practicing psychologist from Washington, coaching us in mindfulness using a quick method known by the acronym RAIN, R-A-I-N. Her books are Radical Acceptance and the new one, True Refuge. And now or anytime online at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show and to find out about Tara and her book. So let's open the phones at 203-776-9677, 203-776-9677. I want to go over what those initials stand for again, because we have new people piling into the show every 15 minutes so that you can join this conversation. And the letters are, for a quick mindfulness check, R-A-I-N, and they stand for what, Tara?
R is recognize, A is allow, and by that means you recognize what's going on inside me right now. Okay, I'm feeling fear, I'm feeling sad, caught in kind of obsessive thinking about food, whatever it is, recognize it and then allow it. Means you pause and give room for what's there. The I is investigate. Find out what's going on with interest. And it also is investigate with an intimate attention, which means with the quality of kindness or friendliness. And when we do that, when we investigate and there's a quality of friendliness, we're in relationship with ourselves, there's a shift. And the N, there's nothing to do. The N is not identified. We're no longer identified with that small, you know, anxious, sad, whatever it is, we're no longer identified with the reactivity, and we're residing again in a more whole and balanced place.
The feeling that starts this, that makes us need mindfulness, can be so intense that you identify with whatever it is. You know, you are the anger. You are the frustration. You are the sadness. So what about that?
That's the whole, what you're saying right now is the source of the suffering. It's that our whole sense of who we are contracts and becomes that emotion. And the gift and the fruit of mindfulness is we get to relax open again and inhabit more of a whole sense of who we are. And we can bring mindfulness to any of those places we get stuck. I mean, I've seen people bring mindfulness, you know, and I describe this in True Refuge, to when they're facing their own mortality, when they've gotten the diagnosis and they know they don't have that long to live. Or one of my friends had a heart transplant and didn't know whether it was very, very dicey, didn't know if he'd get through, and he was able to use these practices. A woman whose son committed suicide. I mean, to the worst things you can possibly imagine, each of us, deep down, wants to have some sort of a refuge, a way home, so we can find something that can hold the most difficult losses. And training our attention like this begins to give us the capacity to be with what arises in our life with a lot more balance and a lot more strength.
So we tend to talk about this kind of thing only in terms of loss. Is RAIN and other mindfulness techniques, are these useful in recognizing what's positive, that you have grown, that you are happy, that you feel tremendous love?
You know, one of the most important things in terms of our own transformation and growth is that when there are positive emotions, when there's something beautiful, when there's something that gives us pleasure, that in the same way we learn to pause and deepen our attention. And neuroscience knows that, you know, it says that neurons that fire together wire together. that whatever you regularly think about or feel, that becomes the inclination of your mind. So part of the training with mindfulness is that when something happy, when there's happiness, when there's a moment of sensing, you know, a real the mystery of things, that we pause and we actually let that soak in, let it soak through us, so we get familiar with the feelings of well-being, and then that becomes more of our patterning the more we pay attention to it. So it's the exact same principle.
Brian, thank you so much for calling 203-776-WNPR. I'm on with Tara Brock, who's a psychologist and has written her newest book, True Refuge. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, Faith, wanted to find out from Tara. I've recently begun reopening Jon Kabat-Zinn's book, Mindfulness, Full Catastrophe Living. And he is very clear about, he refers to it as mindfulness meditation. Is there meditation in a meditation component in what Tara is referring to, or is it a different ball of wax with Jon Kabat-Zinn?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Brian. Thank you, and I'm going to, Tara, let you answer this, and I'll explain why I've been sort of skirting that word. Go ahead.
Yeah, Brian, thank you for your question. Mindfulness requires training. It's a natural capacity, but the meditations, the training in mindfulness, so that we actually, on purpose, learn to direct our attention to what's right here and now. We learn to come back from the discursive thinking, and it actually takes practice. So what John is talking about in mindfulness training and what we're talking about here is definitely the same territory.
Yeah, and I was sort of not using the word because I think sometimes people can become intimidated by the word meditation. It sounds like something so big, so complex. And if you say more mindful or stress reduction, everybody says, oh, that's interesting. And they don't necessarily get scared off by a need for expertise. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, that totally makes sense to me. It's interesting. It's beginning to shift in the culture that I think more and more people are getting that just the way we exercise our body, we do need to exercise our mind, and meditation is simply the training of attention of the mind. But it definitely has some triggers for people that can seem overwhelming.
All right. Stay where you are, Tara Brock, author of True Refuge, and we'll continue our conversation at 203-776-9677. We'll be right back. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR, FaithWNPR, or join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to you for listening and to our talented team, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. We have Tara Brock on with us, lucky us. She is a practicing psychologist from Washington, D.C., and she's coaching us right now in mindfulness using a quick method known by the acronym RAIN. Her books are Radical Acceptance and the new one, True Refuge. You can find it now or anytime online at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. Tara, I'm going to go to the phones in a second, but at the mindfulness workshop you gave at Omega Institute this summer in New York State, and in your book, you talk about how mindfulness has been helpful with your own medical challenge.
That's right. In fact, that was behind writing True Refuge. I have a connective tissue problem that makes it so that I started gradually getting more and more injuries until I really had was unable to do many things I love to do. And it forced me to even go more deeply into that inquiry of how do I make peace with life, even in the midst of this kind of loss. And I really came to this deep prayer, may I love this life no matter what, and really more actively engage with the mindfulness practices with that, and also with the practices of self-compassion. So that was a really strong impetus. I'm actually a lot better physically now, but I got the benefits of having gone more deeply into it, because the real message I got out of it was that if we learn how to come into the present moment, and if we come into the present moment with a quality of kindness, we can really meet anything that arises in our life.
Powerful. May I love this life no matter what. Peter, thank you for calling 203-776-WNPR. We have Tara Brock on the line, as you know. Go ahead, Peter.
Hi. Kind of bizarre story. I've had numerous medical issues myself over the past 7 years, so I found mindfulness training rather helpful, and I found Tara's podcast on the internet and have been listening to them for about a year or so, and had commented to my mother about having, you know, gotten a lot of benefit from this. And my mother actually reminded me that she's been friends with Tara's family for 30-some-odd years back when they lived in Montclair. And in fact, I went to high school with your brother, Peter. And I had never thought of it. And, you know, it's very bizarre. I've been listening to you for a year.
Well, it's a pleasure to reconnect this way.
It's very bizarre.
So
I had no idea. You know, I just never thought of it.
Peter, let me add, that's a funny question. So I remember once meeting someone, an artist who'd done a painting, and I realized that the story that I had created about this painting, I could no longer hold on to, because I'd met the artist, and the artist said, no, here's what I was thinking. So in knowing that you know Tara, does it change your experience with the book or the information in any way?
No, not at all. I already found great comfort and solace from the book and the kind of weird relationship. To me, it's just kind of a great coincidence.
Yeah.
One of the wonderful things about life.
Yeah. And how do you use mindfulness with whatever illness you face? How's it helpful?
I've had so many injuries. I've had lots of surgeries, so I'm in chronic pain. And in order to deal with the pain, you know, I don't take medication for it. Mindfulness is important. You know, you have to acknowledge what you're feeling and not cling to it. You know, I can't deny that I'm in pain all the time, but you know, I enjoy my kids. I have my moments. You know, the pain is there, and I'm aware of it, but, you know, I don't hold on to it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Peter. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. 203-776-WNPR. Tara?
It's a pleasure to hear what Peter shared. I'm remembering a phrase that one teacher told me, that the whole of our transformation is learning to meet our edge and soften. And there's something in the edge of pain and just softening, just being present and open, that it's still there, but it doesn't rule our experience so much. There's more freedom. So I'm grateful to hear that from Peter.
I've heard someone say a kind of softening around the pain.
That's right. Exactly that if you can feel the pain but sense the space around it, the just soften around it, so that you're not focusing right in on the where it's unpleasant, you're including the space around it, or including sound, or including some other part of your body where it's not so painful. It's like the image of if you put a dye into a sink, what happens, and when you put dye into a lake. If you become larger, you can work with what's there with much more ease.
Certainly there's value in positive thinking, but how is what you're talking about, mindfulness, different from the old Dale Carnegie school, which was just have positive thoughts, you know, any negative thoughts, drive them out of your head and you will become a positive person. How is that different from mindfulness?
Mindfulness doesn't have anything to do with replacing thoughts. It's about being aware of your thoughts. There are many thoughts that are fear-based and are going to keep on spinning us in fear and anxiety. And so with mindfulness training, you're really becoming aware of all thoughts and getting the knack of stepping out of what I call the trance of thinking, because we're obsessive thinkers, and really entering the aliveness of the present moment. And that's what I think we miss. We race through our lives. We really are on our way somewhere so much that there's a sense in some way that we're missing out. And mindfulness reconnects us with the moment in a precious way.
I wonder how mindfulness fits in with this. I was doing some research online and discovered from a palliative care nurse that the number one statement from people who are right at the end of their lives and know that they're just about to die, they say to the nurses, most of them, I wish I had been able to be the most myself that I could have been. And so that is my regret. How would that be eased by living a more mindful life?
I want to say that I really agree with that sentiment. I mean, I think that is the regret, that I didn't live true to myself. And what happens is that most of us are so impacted by the messages of our culture and our caregivers that we should be a certain way. We've internalized it, that we spend a lot of our life trying to meet certain standards and get the approval of others and get our own approval. And we lose touch with what most matters to us. And I think one of the most powerful things about mindfulness is it helps us to reconnect with what we really care about. In fact, one of the great reflections in mindfulness is really, what is it that most matters to me right this moment? And then to really pay attention to your heart, to your being. There's a great Zen teaching that the most important thing is remembering the most important thing. So if we spent more moments where we were remembering what we cared about, whether it was feeling love with another person or keeping alive our creativity, being in nature, whatever it is, our lives would be more aligned with our hearts and we would die without regrets.
Vicki, Faith Middleton with Tara Brach, author of True Refuge. We're talking about mindfulness on the show. Go ahead, Vicki.
Hi, I am so excited to speak with you. I listen to your show so often.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, I'm a physical therapist in New York, and two examples of helping patients cope with pain that's indirectly related to mindfulness. And one is dealing with people, generally older people, who have fear of falling and or fear of their pain, and it stops them. And I'll say to them, you know, you may have this fear of pain or fear of falling. Let's do what you have to do, but let's not let the pain control you. We'll acknowledge that it's there. Acknowledge I've got pain, but I'm going to control it. It's not going to control me, and that seems to help people. And the other example is, you know, the things we say to ourselves. And I think of a 90-some-odd-year-old woman who was unwilling and screaming, I can't, I can't, I can't, when I tried to stand her up to walk after she'd had her hip surgery, a broken hip. And I finally gave up, and I said, you know what, we're not going to try to stand, but just say the words, I'll try. And eventually she did, and I said, now would you like to try to stand up? And she stood right up. Just two examples, not exactly mindfulness. Tara, maybe you can comment about how it relates.
Yeah, I think you're talking about, Vicki, the stories we tell ourselves. Go ahead, Tara.
Well, thank you, Vicki, very much so. I mean, we live in a lot of storylines of I'm not enough, or I can't do this, or I shouldn't do that. And in the moment that we open up possibility, our body gets the message.
Yes.
Our body realizes that something's possible.
Yes.
Thank you, Vicki.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much. I love the show.
Thank you. You're so kind. So,
bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Vic, Tara Brock, there is a psychiatrist, Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning. It's one of the greatest books of my life. And you quote something from his book that's a favorite part of mine about the space.
Mine. It's my favorite, too. Yeah, Viktor Frankl says that in between the stimulus and the response, there is a space. And in that space is our power and our freedom. And I think that gets right to the heart of mindfulness, that when we're in a chain of reactivity, which we are through the day, you know, we're reacting to one thing, planning, worrying, and so on, if we can pause, in that pause, we can come into this presence that has infinite possibility. And there's two questions that really can help us to find that space. And one of the questions is very simply, what is happening inside me right now? That will pause you. You can just say right this moment to yourself, what is happening inside me right now? And just gently bring the tension within. Just notice the feelings, the sensations. And the second question is, and can I be with this? Can I be with this? And just see if it's possible to offer a space to what's here. And in those moments of that simple arriving into presence, we step out of our habitual reactivity, whether it's to judge and to blame or to get busy again, and we actually find that we have more possibilities than we had imagined.
Okay, nobody crash off the road when I say this, but there's even a thing called mindful driving.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was driving down the highway and a mindfulness teacher was explaining this to me, Amy Gross, and I all of a sudden I thought, well, how would that go? And then I thought, well, okay, I'm being very aware of my hands on the wheel.
Mm.
On the steering wheel. And it was very different. And I thought, oh, I am right here, present in this moment right now. Because normally if I'm driving, I'm just sailing along, you know, and it's story time in my head. So it was interesting.
You woke up out of the trance.
That's right. Thank heaven for everybody else, I guess. Maybe that's what we should be teaching young people in high school, how to do mindful driving.
I think it's necessary. I mean, hopefully. Because mindfulness is not just what's going on inside you. When you're aware of what's going on in your own body, you actually naturally can widen out and be much more attuned to the world around you.
So is it hard to do this?
It's both the simplest thing in the world, and it takes a ton of practice. That's the honest response. We naturally are mindful. When I say what's going on inside you right now, we can sense what's here, and we can take a moment to be with it, but we have very, very deep conditioning to fight, flight, freeze. In other words, deep conditioning to immediately judge things, blame things, pull away from things, control things. The possibility in an evolutionary way is to move from fight, flight, freeze to attend and befriend. And this is what, you know, humans can do it. We can cooperate, we can collaborate, we can take care of each other. And when we're stressed, fight, flight, freeze overwhelms. So what mindfulness does is starts strengthening the attend, befriend parts of our brain and our heart.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure.
And it was great in your workshop at Omega, I must say. Tara Brock, author of True Refuge. As always, this show is about the richness of life. Find the books, people, recipes, wine, and cocktails we feature online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on programs. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.